Innsmouth, stranger.
Hi, I'm Rob Poynton from the Innsmouth Book Club. Join me and my fellow guide, John Chadwick, as we take you on a fortnightly tour of Innsmouth. We visit places such as the Picture House, the Library, and Innsmouth Museum to discuss all aspects of weird fiction, whether it be book, film, music, TV, or art. As well as that, we stop over at the Gilman House to have a chat with a resident guest. That includes authors, artists, musicians, in fact, Lovecraftian creatives of all types. You can find our free shows on Patreon, and there you can also sign up as a patron, which brings you bonus content, plus a monthly PDF copy of Innsmouth News, which features articles, author spotlights, all the latest news and reviews, and more. You can find us at patreon.com/InnsmouthBC. We hope to see you soon, because remember, Innsmouth isn't just a place, it's a state of mind.
You're listening to KZOM, Oleander Public Radio.
There we go. Now okay. We've got it.
Welcome to People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos.
Okay. Hey, everyone. It's me, DB Spitzer. Once again, Cthulhu Mythos, People's Guide to it. I'm sick. I got back from a con last couple of days. Oh, man. Norwest Con in Seattle? Yeah. I got to wear masks at these things because, man, I think I got 3 colds. But with me, as always, to my virtual right, we've got David Heath and Gretchen Brooks. How are you two doing?
I am well.
I'm doing really good.
And to my virtual right is Baguette, the first baby goat born of the year.
Aww. That's so fun. Awesome. So, yeah, Gretchen, how are you doing? You don't have a baby goat with you?
No, I don't have anything exciting. Like, I just have tarantulas.
Oh, that's cool.
They're pretty exciting.
That's super cool.
They're not really, like, cuddly, though. They just kind of, like, stare at me through their little plastic cages with their little beady eyes and hope for me to put another super worm in there.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, they're not super exciting. They don't like to be held because they're teenagers, so they're really kind of aggressive. Both of them are 2 different types of tarantulas. I'm sure I've talked about these in the past, but yeah, they're,
I don't know.
Yeah, one is a curly-haired tarantula and one is a rose rump tarantula. And they're fun. They're just kind of pet rocks that like eat worms. They're
That's
buzzy.
Cool. That's yeah. cool.
Do they have to get super worms from the planet Arachnus?
they eat Shai Halud.
All right. So, what are we talking about this week, Dave?
We are talking about Ole Worm, which is a good tie-in. And his Latin name is Olus Wormus.
Oh, cool.
And then we're talking about the first Hellboy movie.
The first. Whose pick was this one?
It was mine.
Yep.
Ah, sweet.
I don't even think about Hellboy. I mean, I love the movie. I have it on DVD, but it's like, oh, yeah, it's that movie that's totally... I watch all the time, but don't think about.
Yeah, it's like a comfort watch movie. It's, you know.
Yeah. But yeah, no.
Not a bad thing.
Yeah, bad totally.
Thing. But yeah.
I did get to check out the, I don't know if you guys heard about this, but Weird War was having this kind of like fantasy movie kind of event thing happening. I think I told you guys about it last week. That was like the Cabinet of Dr. Caligari and like it was like a live showing of like the synth band.
Oh yeah, yeah, that sounded cool.
It was really fun. And then later, like this last weekend, we saw like the guy Dennis from Weird War, and he was doing like dungeon metal, like vinyl playing. He was playing like vinyl at Mad Hannah's. It was rad. So we kind of chilled out there Friday night. And then Sunday night, we managed to hit two concerts. Oh, my gosh, you guys. So we saw Lydia Lunch at like 6, 7, 8. And then after Lydia Lunch, went straight to see King Woman over at the Wonder Ballroom. So it was like, boom, boom, two shows.
That's cool.
We were busy last weekend. This weekend, we're not so busy.
You're resting from last weekend.
Dude, the only thing I'm doing this next weekend is this weekend coming up is I'm going to go see The First Omen on Sunday.
Oh, cool. Very cool.
Yeah. I'm kind of hyped for that one.
You've got a ton of baby goats coming, Dave. That's what I understand.
That's the plan. We've got some more coming Sunday, maybe.
Cool.
Goats can be stubborn.
Last weekend, I was at Norwest Con, as I said before. And I always get a cold or something at one of these things because I'm up way too late, get up way too early, don't get enough sleep. And I don't know. I always think I'm
with too many people.
Yeah. I always think I get sick from something, but I think what I get is exhaustion. But
con crud.
Yeah. Con crud, exhaustion, malnutrition. Throw it all together. But it was a fun time. A beautiful hotel. Met a lot of really cool people. And I had a good time. A good time was had by all, it seemed. But Norwest Con. There was a much larger event going on elsewhere, apparently, that people were saying it was pulling away all the people from Norwest Con. And I'm thinking,
SakuraCon.
And I'm thinking, I don't know. I don't think that an anime or, not necessarily just calling it an anime con, but, another type of science fiction con going on isn't that they're taking your people. It's called those people like that, and that's what they're choosing to go to.
Well,
I don't know. There was a lot of people kind of bitter about that SakuraCon was going on. Not a lot. There was a few. And I'd hear people griping about it, and I'm like, oh, wow, I wish I would have known about it. I would have gone to that instead. But I had fun there. There was a lot of neat people there, and it is a literary. I mean, honestly, it's a literary festival. It's a lot like how H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival in Portland ultimately is about books, and this is like more about books than it is movies. Is they have so many authors at Norwest Con. There's so many people who have created things. And I'm sure there's that at SakuraCon, but I mean, that's what like Norwest Con is like based off of like writers. And, it's like they had like a bunch of like people, Philip K. Dick Award winners there. And
oh, cool.
Yeah. I mean, it was a really cool, fun convention. Yeah,
I don't see those two cons overlapping at all. Like, honestly, like the clientele
either,
that go to both is like meh and like minimal, like a 2%, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. And has a ton of money. But
their days.
Yeah.
One that, Saturday at one and Sunday at another.
Sure. Yeah. Dave's going, well, I would do that. But that was my weekend. So, who's this worm guy?
I was wondering the same thing.
Asks the host who picks the stuff. Old worm, Oleus. I don't know. What do we know about this guy? He's mentioned in the Necronomicon.
Like that he supposedly was like the first like translator of the Necronomicon as far as like the fictional version of him, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
So So he really was a real person from.
Yeah.
He was a Danish scholar who Lovecraft probably discovered in an encyclopedia.
He was like thumbing through one, and he was like, I like this name.
Pretty much, yeah. And I completely suspect that he picked them because of the name. And he uses a name, and all of our Danish people will hate my mispronunciation, but he uses the Latin name, mm-hmm. which makes me think that he probably, because he went as Ole or Olo, however you pronounce it, not Olas. So the fact that Lovecraft used the Latinized version of the name kind of makes me think that he pulled it out of an encyclopedia.
Yeah. And part of me's thinking, he's like, oh man, I've used John D too many times. Who can I use now?
Well, he uses D. So this comes out of the history of Necronomicon.
Correct.
Which he also uses D.
Mm-hmm.
So later on. So he uses both names.
Yeah. No, he does use both names. But I feel like at some point in time, he's like, I need to use someone else other than John D, who he's used in other stories. But yeah, no. Wormus, I definitely feel is kind of, I don't know. It's not a historical Olaus Wormus, as as the Romans would have said, Olaus Vermis. That's not even close to what they would have said anyway. But yeah, no. This is a fictional version that is 4 centuries younger than the actual historical Wormius.
Yeah.
So this is definitely a Lovecraftian invention of someone who already existed, but
yeah. And how much of an influence? I think that, you know, Wormus is better known because of Lovecraft, at least in America, than he is for the real person. In fact, if you type in his name into Google, you know, the Lovecraft.com or, you know, the Lovecraft Wikipedia comes up as the number 3 subject.
Yeah.
So he's much more well known, at least in the United States, because of his connection to Lovecraft.
Mm-hmm. I'm still pretty ignorant of like him, so this was like new news to me today. I was all, oh.
Yeah. No. If you're not a Lovecraftian, or you know you're not into the weird fiction, He was just a natural philosopher who collected stuff from the New World and taxidermied animals, fossils, all kinds of stuff. And
so he's kind of Darwinian?
Like, no, it's more of a cabinet of curiosities of the natural world.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. Plants, man-made objects, minerals, animals, all that kind of fun stuff. And then his catalog was published later, after his death in 1654. It was called the Museum Worminium. Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, no. 4 books. Yeah, its first 3 are dealing with minerals. The last one is archaeological and ethnographic in nature.
So, and I don't mean this as an insult, and I'm sure that the entire Worm family is going to be upset that I say this.
Sure.
In reality, he was kind of a poor man's von Humboldt.
Yeah.
But again, you know, Humboldt invented, you know, natural science. But yeah, and nobody, in fact, there, according to his biographer, there are more things, including cities, animals, named after Humboldt, than any other person alive.
Interesting. So,
but yeah, he was kind of like in the same vein, but not as influential as Humboldt.
Okay, interesting.
And so you're right about the 400 years. So Lumley, in his book, Lord of the Worms, he kind of addresses that. the same person, or is he an immortal sorcerer?
Gotcha.
And I don't think Lovecraft, I think Lovecraft just took the name and he didn't care what date he was putting, because it wasn't really supposed to get out. At least originally, the history of the Necronomicon was for the Circle. It was so other writers would be able to write about it consistently. I don't think he really planned on it being published. And so I don't think Lovecraft cared that there was a 400-year difference. He just liked the name. He was going to do what he wanted because he was Lovecraft, dang it.
Yep. I don't know what else there is to talk about Wormius, honestly.
Yeah, it's a pretty thin subject of him.
Pretty thin subject. I don't know who picked that. Like a but name. Man. Yeah, no, the coolest thing about the guy is his name and his cabinet. No, there's more.
How weird that it's such a good link in to Guillermo del Toro, by the way.
Who we'll be talking about in the next segment. So hold on to your hats and we'll be there in a moment.
In Legacy Door, a lurker from space casts a shadow over time.
We opened our eyes upon the human world. We found ourselves lying on an especially yielding bed in a room displaying scattered relics of their shallow past, tied together by more recently produced items meant to blend with the relics. Typical.
A sensitive journalist dreams of unknown lives.
It seems like every time I close my eyes, they get stronger. I can't even say the last time I had a normal sleep, let alone a dreamless one.
An outspoken lawyer defends the suspect in an unspeakable crime.
And that client was Jonathan Strauss, held for the murder of his daughter Abigail and her companion Harrison Reese.
And a stalwart investigator tries to drag it all into the light.
Some of the Reeses and the Strausses have been involved with something that seems to include an obsession with bloodlines and longevity for at least decades.
Legacy Door is a weekly cosmic horror mystery podcast. An ensemble of actors tell a story, also available in paperback, Kindle, and audiobook. Available now.
Moving on to the next part, just to remind everyone, if you like what you're hearing, like this episode, share it with people. Subscribe to the podcast. Find us on Facebook. We're under People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos. We're on Twitter. I don't really check Twitter, so it's just kind of the automatic feed. If you just want to listen to us on Twitter for some reason, you can find us on any place, any podcatchers that are out there. Of course, Facebook, Instagram, and of course, the YouTube, where this episode will be. And,
This part of the show doesn't have a theme song. This part of the show doesn't have a theme song yet. Dave and DB and Gretchen go to the movies. Hopefully next week we'll have a real theme song. Yeah.
Hey everyone, we're back talking about the 2004 Hellboy film featuring Hellboy's Hellboy. It's amazing how they did that.
Yeah.
So I'll be honest, when I first saw Hellboy the movie, I had no idea anything about him other than like what he looked like and that it was a Dark Horse comic. Like literally no knowledge, but I like Guillermo del Toro. So sure. I wish I had read the comics, but unfortunately I had not.
I was super into the comics. I had like Hellboy lighters. I had a Hellboy metal lunchbox that I still use for keeping like graphite in. I was excited about this movie. I was super duper excited about this movie. And I knew that nothing other than disappointment was going to come my way. I remember at one point. No, I loved it. I thought it was a great movie.
Were you disappointed that you were not disappointed?
I actually was excited. I mean, only a few years earlier, episodes 1 and 2 had come out for Star Wars. So it's like, get disappointed, kids. I mean, it's the new era of media consumption, watching it and getting mad about it and then writing something online. Well, but
how long was the comic out before the movie came out?
Oh, geez, probably at least 10 years, I want to say. And it wasn't always like just like a pure comic. Before, it was like something that popped up in the back of other comics or in I think it's a localish paper called it was like a kind of not it was it
oh,
was like
it Dark
the,
Horse Presents?
Yeah.
Dime Press. Was the prototype, and that first came out in 93.
Okay.
But I
think
there was some Dark Horse Presents too, as well as some things on like for Comic-Con specials.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Yeah. I think it wasn't in my, for whatever reason, I think during that time period, I was traveling a lot. And so I don't think it was in my like loop of time. Cause it was like the late 90s was like when I was like, you know, moving around and yeah. And then I had a kid. And so it was like, that was, yes, I didn't have time for comics. I don't know.
Yeah.
But no, so it was out of my wheelhouse. And when it first came out, I was like, wow, like I was totally blown away, not knowing what to expect with this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I hadn't read the comics, but I had read some of the Hellboy novels.
Okay.
So I had an idea of the character. I got into the comics really big after the movie. But I had read, like I said, I'd read some of the novels, but not the comics yet.
Okay. Yeah, no. And oddly enough, it's like, I got into the comic books when they first came out, and I read the books, and I bought cool stuff, and then the movie came out, and then it was like kind of like that need had been met. It's like, oh, okay, cool. And then I just never cared about Hellboy again, except for like watching the DVD. I quit collecting like Hellboy comics and stuff like that. It was like the steam valve was released. It's like, oh, okay, cool. All right. And then I feel like I started to be able to find Lovecraftian stuff a lot more places. It's like something about Hellboy wasn't like the first movie or anything by a long shot, but it was the one that I felt like I could go, see, this is what I'm talking about, you guys. This is the kind of stuff I like. And people would go, oh, okay, all right.
Don't you guys think that this one specifically is so like Lovecraftian, like Samael is like, isn't that what his name is, the monster? He's very Lovecraftian.
Well, oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, and this is like Lovecraft. No, this is very, very Lovecraftian, but with like heavy pulp overtones. It's like, I don't know. Lovecraft and Indiana Jones had a baby.
Totally.
And no, definitely. And it only makes a really brief appearance, but it was Odur Jahad, which is, you know, is a great old one.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, it is.
And we have fish people.
Yes, there's fish people. There's outer gods, there's all kinds of stuff. And it's fun. It's not dumb. It's based off of Hellboy Seed of Destruction, which I want to say came out in
94.
Shoot, I can't even, what's that?
94.
Okay, yeah. Cause I was reading that like in culinary school, after I graduated from high school, I was reading Seed of Destruction because I was one of those people that went to the comic book store at least once a week to see what was going on and pick up stuff in those days.
And there's one scene where he drags around the corpse on his back.
I love that scene.
That's from the body, I believe.
Yes, it is. Or what? Yeah, it is not from, but it is from one other Hellboy story. But yeah.
I think it's the body and it was two stories in one comic.
Yeah. But if you haven't read Hellboy Seed of Destruction, I highly recommend people go out there and check it out. I remember like hearing people online like I feel so old. People talking about who was gonna play Hellboy and like script parts leaking out about like Hellboy being like locked in a cage, you know, when he wasn't in use, and Vin Diesel was gonna play him, and then I remember signing a petition of it being like no one but Ron Perlman should play Hellboy.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, it wasn't the body, it was the corpse was the episode.
The corpse,
the,
yeah.
The corpse, yes.
Okay.
And so there's a story that that Del Toro and Magnolia were basically sitting down saying who they wanted to be in the movie, but they didn't want to influence each other. So they both wrote it down on a napkin, and they both wrote Ron Perlman.
Yeah.
Oh, how funny.
And you know who Hellboy's physically based off of? Ron Perlman. Like, Mike Mignola. Really?
I was going to say me. Yes.
No, really? Is it really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Mike Mignola based it off of Ron Perlman, like the face and stuff like that. Well, like once he started like fine tuning it and stuff like that from the original, just like big red guy with horns that kind of rips off Wolverine, you know, and some looks here and there maybe.
And why did we reboot this with a different actor if Hellboy himself is based off of Ron Perlman?
I have no idea. I have no idea. I
mean, not to like veer out of the fact that there's other Hellboy movies like that we weren't not part of this week's discussion, but like I feel like that third one was like stupid, but
yeah,
but also, had good elements. I don't know.
So I actually, way before the third one came out, and I actually liked that other one, but and I liked David Harbour, but obviously this is Ron Perlman. So I asked at a signing, I asked Mike Mignola if there was going to be a Hellboy 3. And this was and he said they were still working on it. So I got the impression from that and other things that I've read, because the first one didn't make its money in the U.S.
That's crazy.
It made it off of the DVD, and it made off international sales. So I think it came down to money. And somebody's gonna probably who's in the business will tell us that I'm wrong, and please do. But I think that what happened was that the people that were involved in the movies basically split up. They went their own way. And when somebody decided that they were going to fund another one, they started from scratch.
And let's not forget the fact that Ron Perlman is now 73 years old.
Yeah.
True.
And he broke his ribs making this movie.
Yeah.
Oh, he I don't did? Know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He broke on that.
So, I mean, I guess it only makes sense because, like, if you're going to cast somebody that looks like Ron Perlman in a way, that David, what's his name? I'm so sorry.
David Harbour.
David Harbour, which I really love that actor, but, like, he does not have the same je ne sais quoi, so to speak, that Ron Perlman has and that Ron Perlman brings to the character himself. Yeah. I read that they just went on and did cartoons to continue the Hellboy stories like they have, like the Storm, Sword of Storms and things like that. Mm-hmm. But, and like continuing on doing that and having Ron Perlman do the voice, because at least that feels authentic. Mm-hmm. Whereas this was like, this is a pretty version of him, you know, that was the kind of vibe I got.
I want to say it's like, it's like, okay. The David Harbour. It's like
I'm Michael sorry, I didn't mean to turn us down this aisle.
No. This is my opinion. It's like Michael Bublé singing, or I don't know if that's even a guy. I think that's a singer. Or Ed, I don't know. One of those YouTube singer guys singing a Tom Waits song. It's like a pretty person singing like a rough and tumble, smoke cigars, I pet cats who drink gasoline. That's why Tom Waits impersonation.
Yeah, Tom Waits.
But yeah, and there's only one Ron Perlman, and you know he's too old for this. So we need a new Ron Perlman.
Yeah, I get
a clone.
Possibly, I don't know.
I would like them to just to continue in a cartoon format, because then we could actually see more. But I don't know. I really agree. The cartoon films; those were pretty good.
Super duper agree on that note.
Absolutely. The two cartoons were, I think, amazing, and they were going to do a third.
Yeah.
Which would have been a Lobster Johnson story.
Yeah.
That's where I was kind of like, for me, it veered. I lost interest when we got further into the BPRD.
Yes.
And I know that's where some people really like it, but like, I liked the second movie, but the influence of the BPRD was really annoying in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And
I mean, there were some cool characters. Don't get me wrong. I really liked Seth. Oh my gosh. I just had it in my head. The ghost character that lived in the suit.
Yeah.
The Family Guy dude.
Yes. What's his name?
He's like,
Seth something, right? Yeah. McFarlane,
yes.
Yay, good job, brain.
And ironically, that's one of the few things I like him in.
Yeah.
I tend to not like Seth MacFarlane. Sorry, no, same.
He plays the same character. It's kind of, you know, he's just kind of a... But, like, I really liked that story, like the fairies and the elves, and I thought that was such a cool, cool story. And then it just kind of... like, but the first one of all these films is honestly the best. Like, we have Rasputin, we have immortal Nazis. Like, it is crazy. And so much fun to watch. I loved the graveyard scene where we're leading into like the basically the train ride. Like it's so good.
Yeah, no. And I have to say, it's like the opening scenes for this movie feel like the comic book. There's a lot of this that feels like the comic book. And then you start getting into stuff with characters that don't exist plots that don't make sense for a Hellboy comic, and just like moviness, stuff that has to happen in a movie, I guess.
Yeah.
But for better or worse, and I mean it's like two different mediums. You change things, but
I get that him and Liz have a love story, but
yeah.
I agree with you that I like from the comics that they have this brother and sister relationship.
Totally.
Yeah. There
is though, and I know I think the animated movies captured that very good, very well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That said, there is one thing that I think is better than the movie than the comics.
What's that?
Cronin.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah.
No, no.
He's kind of just a generic mad scientist.
Yeah.
But I like
clockwork.
Him.
So Emily gets me eggs. Let me